Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. Chuck Bono, Julie Hayden. This is going to be Party Friday, and we've got a lot to party about. So Chuck and Julie, grassroots show, true straight up.
That's right. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine.
All right. We've got with us the hero of the day and night, Greg Lopez. He won the special election over in CD 4, and it was a glorious victory. I'm not sure it was anticipated, but I think everybody's pleased, with the exception of Jerry Sonnenberg and Ted Harvey. So with no further ado, Greg, great to have you on.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on, fellas. It's a pleasure to be on the show with you guys.
So did you script this whole thing out? So, you know, okay, I'm behind early, the first vote. You know, I'm really behind the two top guys, Sonnenberg and so, but I'll gain and gain and gain and then be over the top.
I wish I could say that I did script it out. You know, I could tell you this. So, you know, clearly, I firmly believe the Lord was on my side. You know, I had talked to a lot of the members of the vacancy committee before, you know, just like anything else. And I had a good sense that, you know, when I was talking to them, that they really were looking, they were kind of leaning towards not having a declared candidate, you know, be selected. And so as the night progressed, that's exactly how it turned out.
Yeah. Well, let me back up and explain to folks what we're talking about. So when Ken Buck tried to do a swampy rhino deal that would allow him to screw over Lauren Boebert and President Trump by resigning early, there were a lot of people speculating, and we saw this play out last night, that it was just going to be a passing of the baton on to fellow rhino Jerry Sonnenberg. Lauren Boebert called Buck out on that. Deborah Flora did too, because one, basically 111, and there were insiders, these are Weld County Party people, were going to be selecting the candidate who would run in the special election to temporarily fill Buck's place. And the thing being that if you were running in as for a special election, but we're also running in the basically the general primary, that would give you a boost. And it was going to be basically the thought was he was going to try to throw the race to Jerry Sonnenberg. And as last night played out, you could see it kind of came down to Ted Harvey, a grassroots guy, Jerry Sonnenberg.
Formerly a grassroots guy.
Yeah, formerly a grassroots guy. And then you. And I think, Greg, from the beginning, were saying what they really need to do is put a placeholder person in it, which you have pledged to do. So why don't you explain that?
Not just a placeholder.
Well, he's doing a good job, but I mean,
guy who's got, I've never seen him deviate from his agenda. I mean, he's been for the opt-out. He's been for everything that grassroots is for. So I have no temerity that he'll go up to Congress and do anything but a great job.
Thank you, Chuck. You know, it was a very interesting evening. And so, like I said, you know, I don't think anybody was expecting what occurred. I mean, I was feeling good on the first vote because, you know, I ended up tying for fourth, which was a good thing. And the way it started, I think, you know, for those that were watching it or listening to it, we only had 2 minutes to address the committee in the first round. That was your nomination. You had 2 minutes to address them. And then they voted. Right. And, you know, some people didn't get any votes and others did. And, you know, when they came down to the top five, that's when we were allowed to speak to the committee for 6 minutes. And the remaining five was myself, Richard Hortor, Mike Lynch, Ted Harvey, and Jerry Sonnenberg. And so we had to draw cards. I ended up speaking in between two sets. So I was the third speaker. And after that round, I was at I think I had 17 votes going into that round.
Right.
And Jerry, and I think Jerry had 23, and maybe Ted had 24. And then after that round, they came back, and I ended up with 27, and they were still at 23 and 24. And from that moment forward, every time that they were voting, I was gaining and gaining and gaining until the last round. I was at 45 votes, and I only needed 51. And then that's when Ted Harvey and Jerry decided that perhaps it would be best if one of them supported each other. And Ted Harvey decided that he was going to support Jerry. And the final vote came down that I was, Jerry got 46 votes and I got 51 votes.
Well, and we'll get into the Ted Harvey thing later, because I'm like, what the frick is going on with Ted Harvey? And I think he may have destroyed his career. Yeah.
Any career he had is now gone.
I think you see what's crucial is, and I want to ask you why you're bothering to do this, Greg, is that you're saying, look, I will not be running in the primary. So that to me, the key thing about this is it's not only do we have a great guy in Washington, D.C. here for the next few months after Ken Buck screwed over the state, but that's you, right? We have you there. But in the meantime, the race itself can now play out the way that it would have played out with Buck's attempted interference. And I mean, to me, that's huge, right? That's election integrity. I mean, how do you look at it?
I totally agree with you. You know, I mean, when he resigned, it just created chaos. It created chaos and confusion. The governor had to call a special election, and he put it on the same day as the primary election. And so I'm looking at this, and I'm watching and talking to people, and I was like, you know what? We got to stop this. We got to stop this chaos. We got to stop this and make it a fair election. Let these candidates that when they jumped in, they fully expected that they would fight it all the way through the primary ballot without any special opportunities, any special types of things. And so when I saw what was happening and I was watching some of the conversation, I said, you know what? I need to step in. I need to see if I can level the playing field, take out the confusion and the chaos, and just make it where individuals will be able to fight their, make their argument in front of all the electoral in the Republicans versus just a small group. And it turned out that, you know, that's what the vacancy committee agreed, that I was right, and that's the way that we should go.
Now, reportedly, there's a controversy, a claim by a Douglas County Ted Harvey backer claiming the Larimer County votes shouldn't have been counted the way they were counted or whatever. What more do you know about that?
Well, you know, I know that in the very beginning of the meeting, there was a challenge that said that, you know, some of the chairs, vice chairs, and secretaries of a county did not physically live inside the boundaries of CD4. And so because they didn't physically live inside the boundaries, that they should not be allowed to vote. And yet they were told that they could assign someone that lived inside the boundaries, right?
Right.
To represent that area because they are part of CD4.
Right.
And so they brought it up, and the chair of the CD4 committee, Tom Weems, made a motion for every one of those counties and asked the entire membership, should they be seated? And he asked them, if you believe they should, rise. And 99% of the people rose up, except for two people from Douglas County, on every single one of those counties.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, it's a fake controversy. I know that's how they do it in CD8. And as you said, everyone voted for it. So now let's ask him about Ted Harvey, because I liked Ted Harvey. I've always liked Ted Harvey. But when he stood up last night, when it was clear he was going to lose, right, that he did not have the vote, so it was going to be you and Jerry Sonnenberg, not only did he urge his supporters to give it to the rhino, Jerry Sonnenberg, which would almost have certainly or very clear significantly helped Sonnenberg in the primary, so it would be replacing Rhino Buck with another rhino, but then he said you would be a risk to the country. I mean, what was that about?
know, Julie, I have no idea. I don't know where that came from. Because I thought Ted and I were friends. You know, I've never spoken ill of any of these gentlemen. And so I think the entire crowd, including myself, was kind of unsure as to where is he going with this. And you're right. He basically said that he was disappointed in the votes of the committee because he believed that they weren't voting for a candidate, that they were voting for candidates that weren't there. And he felt that I would be a threat to the nation because he felt that, you know, there's going to be these tremendous decisions that were going to be made in the next 6 months. And he would never, he said he would never put his nation in risk and jeopardy with someone like me.
Now, I think he's watching too much freaking MSNBC to say that you're a threat to democracy. It's like
too much THC. I mean,
anyone that you don't like is a threat to democracy. Well, and here's the point. I guess he has a kind of a point, but that's to me, and I know Lauren Boebert argued for this, Deborah Flora argued for this, a lot of people argue for this, that go ahead and send someone in who's not going to be running in the sort of the general primary, and that keeps the playing field level. It thwarts. But for Ted Harvey to say he would rather send, and I know some people don't like Rhino, but that's what the word I'm going to use.
We like Rhino.
Rhinos,
but the term.
But some people that he would, as a grassroots patriot farmer, would rather send a Rhino to Congress than to, I don't know what. I don't. It's just sour grapes or something. I mean, I think that's going to hurt Ted Harvey, and I don't know. You may not want to comment on that, but that's just what I think.
Well, I can tell you this: the audience was not happy. It was not well received what he said, and I think how he presented it and the implication of the vote. And I think it was because they knew the way the vote was going that it wasn't going to go in either one of those favors. And so he decided that he was going to try to see if there was some way to, at the last minute, shift the way the vote was going for the representatives. And, you know, sometimes they say, you know, desperate measures cause people to do desperate things. But, you know, the people voted. And I don't know. You know, I do think that he's got some damage control. I think he's done an unforced error. Why he did that, I have no idea. But he's the one that's going to have to deal with the ramifications of his own actions.
Let me ask you this, though. I mean,
you promised him to not take too much of his time.
Okay, let me ask you one question then. Okay, you had not even won. They were still counting the final votes, and the liberal lefty media was already attacking you. It's like, did you wake up this morning and go, wait a minute, what was I thinking? I mean, these are ancient.
Jerry Paul or whoever his name is.
Jesse Paul.
Paul.
Ancient history. You've addressed these repeatedly before.
And all the reporters are going, yeah, what about that 92 deal? You know, you've only talked about it 1,000 times, so we need to hear more about that.
It's just going to be fun, huh, Greg?
You know, and look, my wife, Lisa, you've met her.
Yes.
You know, that incident was 30 years ago. We've been married 35 years. We know that anytime we step forward in any type of leadership position, in any type of situation where we are trying to lead from the front, you know, people are going to try to knock us down. So, you know what? We're accustomed to this. Unfortunately, that's the way human nature is. I don't understand it. But I do know that, you know, we're going to stand tall. Our marriage is strong. We know that. And that's all that matters. You know, and we'll see what happens because ultimately it's the voters.
All right.
Well, I think I'm so proud of you getting elected. And I can't think of anybody I'd rather send to Washington to support the Republican Party for this critical period coming up than you. So congratulations. And we'll talk to you again later, hopefully.
All right, guys, it's a pleasure to be on your show. Look forward to the next time.
All right, okay. Thank you, Greg. All right. Yeah, Greg, we got great comments here. This from Sandra. Interesting, these rhinos keep outing themselves. Good for all of us to know. Let's hope they all get ousted. Charlene, Ted Harvey hurt himself with MAGA, I think. And then Sandra says, Colorado Sun BS article. Charlene, one of the reporters was trying to intervene while the process was still going on by doing a hit piece on Greg on Twitter. Exactly. Exactly. And if Greg is still listening, all of us are so grateful. Thank you. Yeah. So I think because we want to get you guys' comments here and thoughts on it. This, as we said from the beginning, and guys, I think that this show, I think people like you, played a role in this a little bit because we were one of the few to originally speak out and say, this is what Ken Buck is trying to do. Because everyone was like, what is Ken Buck trying to do? Or like, he's trying to screw over Lauren Boebert and Donald Trump. That's what he's trying to do.
Right.
And he's trying to hand the election over to Jerry Sonnenberg. And I think enough people saw through that and enough people didn't like it. And I think that's why Greg Lopez won.
Well, I love, you know, there's that old saying, big hat, no cattle. And the ultimate big hat, no cattle is Jerry Sonnenberg. He sold whatever cattle he had on his farm, 30 years ago. So he has no cattle, but he's got a big hat. So he's ultimate, no cattle, big hat, but no cattle. And it's, I think all of us, getting the word out who Jerry Sonnenberg was, the California of the year, somebody who portrayed Tabor, portrayed everything else he could possibly portray.
Right. Was sort of the epitome of a rhino. Well, and I think so now because of Greg's position, and again, I do want to commend him, the attack pieces were coming out while they were still counting votes. Yeah. Right. And he didn't have to do that. And I don't really think, you know, like you said, he gets to go to Congress, and that maybe sounds cool, but it's kind of like
rest of your life. You go, okay, congressman.
Right, but he kind of gets a lot of the, he doesn't, I mean, he's not going to be there long enough to probably,
well, that's any, probably perfect.
But I mean, to do any insider trading or.
Oh, sure he can. He can quickly figure out what stocks to trade. Yeah.
To somehow cut some deal with Ukraine. He's not going to be able to do any of that. So he's going to get all of the pain, none of the reward. And he's got to face all of the attacks.
Maybe he can make a deal with whoever does get the permanent one.
But it puts the election back where it belongs. Now, I think going into it, I think a few things happened here. I think it was interesting watching the maneuvering last night because Richard Holtorf then quickly realized, because what happened is the rhinos were splitting the vote. There was Sonnenberg, Holtorf, and Mike Lynch. And the three of them were clearly splitting the vote. Right. Ted Harvey kind of went out to an early, I would say, grassroots lead. Mm-hmm. But I think there was early on, Greg Lopez was tied for third, a surprising amount of support for a candidate who was going to be essentially a placeholder. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but who was not going to seek the permanent office. And then what happened is I think Richard Holtorf and Mike Lynch started seeing.
Well, give credit to Holtorf, good old Buckwheat. Buckwheat, who Jesse Paul noted he split his pants, which, Jesse, you're just such a snarky little man.
It's like,
what a snarky little guy. But he backed Greg, which I thought was brilliant.
Well, and that was probably smart on his part too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's saying, okay, look, if Greg gets in there, then we're kind of go back to where it was before Buck tried to do his evil maneuvering, right? And again, I just want to talk a little bit about Ted Harvey. I just don't understand, given that somehow he feels like rather than letting Greg win, that it would be better to send Jerry Sonnenberg to Congress, given everything that's going on.
And he took out, you know, okay, I just won't say I prefer so-and-so because so-and-so. No, the world is in danger if Greg Lopez.
In danger of Greg Lopez? Are you kidding me? It's like.
What a joke.
And then let's see. How did Greg get in the mix anyway? Whoops, hang on a second. Who put his name up? I think what happened is that. My guess, I'll be honest, is Lauren Boebert might have been.
That's not my guess.
Okay, well.
Because Lauren Boebert never does anything for anybody.
No, what I mean, though, is that there might have been, you're right, I take that back. But what I was saying is I think that there was early on, people like us, people like Lauren, people like Deborah Flora were saying the committee should select someone who is not seeking the general election seat. Right. They should select someone who is only going to temporarily fill Ken Buck's seat and isn't going to seek to win.
And there's one other guy, Mutley.
One other guy. Right.
But nobody knew anything about him, to tell you the truth.
Right. And so I think that, you know, maybe Greg brought it up. My guess would be somebody else may have brought it up. There are only 111.
Well, you don't have to live in the district. All you have to do, I don't know how many signatures or who you had to get, maybe just self-nominated.
You could self-nominate at this.
Because two of the guys never got a vote.
Right.
Never got a vote.
Nope, you could self-nominate here. Well, I think you had to submit your name.
Sure.
I think
sure.
you couldn't just show up and do
no.
it, right? You had to submit your name, and they had to probably make some, like, make sure you were a legal citizen or something like that. But I think that one of the reasons Deborah Flora, for instance, mentioned there was in her Twitter stuff or in various comments she made that there were 111 people in the vacancy committee in CD4, and most of them were elected county officials and mm-hmm. district officials in some way, shape, or form. She said she called and talked to most of them. And my guess is that's why she took her name out, is that
right.
she realized she wasn't going to have enough support or it was going to
no.
be so splintered, right? And she also raised a very good point, and that is, so this is 111 people, there are 450,000 people
affiliates and reform.
Right, who could be voting.
The congressional district covers a little under 800,000 people.
And so she noted, and I think this is fair, that this was certainly not representative of the people there. And I know I saw some media people trying to say, well, you know, does this mean that Sonnenberg and Harvey are maybe leading? I don't think so. I mean, I think, number one, you had two, Lauren Boebert and Deborah Flora, two very popular candidates who weren't even in the running. And again, this was not, I think, and it wasn't meant to be representative of
right,
the district.
Right.
So that's how, so I think that's just how Gray came up. And I think he was kind of surprised he won. My guess would be that somebody made some preliminary phone calls for these people. And she said, I thought Flora put her name in the hat initially. And I'll get to your second question, Charlene, on the rules. Deborah Flora initially did. And then
contacted people, found out she didn't have any support.
Right. Well, and I think once they put the rules out, I think it was very confusing to candidates. It took them like 9 days. So the rules are sort of a combination of Congressional District 4 bylaws and state Republican Party bylaws, and that they have to kind of mesh. And the bylaws said that the vacancy committee of the Weld County Central Committee, right, which ended up having 111 people in it, which are mostly elected officials. Yeah, CD4. Those were the people who could vote. So the bylaws are pretty clear who could vote. But Deborah was saying that, and this is on her Twitter stuff, we have not talked to her personally about this, but that it was a confusing process. It wasn't very transparent. And again, I suspect she made some phone calls, realized she didn't have enough votes to win, so just said, I'm not going to participate.
All right, Jacob's raised his hand. Jacob, what's up?
Hey, Jacob.
Sorry about that. One quick question. So Mr. Lopez now serves Colorado in the U.S. House.
No, he's the nominee for the Democrats will place their nominee up Monday, and then there'll be an election in June, what it is, 20th.
So the way it's confusing. So that's what this is what Buck's evil machinations were all about. So on June 25th, voters in CD4 will get two ballots. They'll vote on two different elections.
Yes, but one ballot.
Okay, so they'll vote first between Greg Lopez and whoever the Democrats put up for the temporary congressional seat to
right.
serve out the rest of Buck's term. Then they will also vote for the Republican primary candidate
right.
who will then run in November against whoever the Democrats put up. And then that person will take over for 2 years in January.
Right.
And it's only temporary unless Mr. Lopez decides to run, right?
No, he can't run. First, he pledged not to. But I mean, the ballots are, I mean, he cannot. You had
he
to have,
enter. The
you had to have
primary.
Entered. Yeah, you had to have entered the primary already. So
okay, my question is that if he becomes a full-fledged congressman,
yes.
in July or June or July or whatever,
yeah.
and then leaves at this second day of January 2025, does he get a pension?
Oh, sure.
And that, probably.
Lifetime pension.
Yeah.
Only a couple hundred thousand a year. But you have to have umpy years.
I guess he probably does. He probably.
No, he doesn't get it. You have to
You don't get some good approach. Well, that's right. There's probably you probably have to. He probably gets, I don't know, a key to the restroom, or I'm not sure what kind of perks you pick up. That's why I was laughing. He's not going to have time to do all the dirty insider trader deals and things like that because he's.
Well, you never know.
I'm sure he can get the number of Pfizer from somebody.
Yeah, really. But you know, here's what's crucial because I know they're trying to. Gallagher wants to quit from Wisconsin. You know,
yeah.
trying to talk him into not. I mean, there are a lot of votes coming up, and you hear people putting out there that they think there are evil Republicans, and Ken Buck kind of hinted at this, who are also going to quit to give the Democrats control of the House.
So they can end all investigations.
So they can end all investigations, so they can pass a law that says Trump can't run, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's a lot at stake here, I think, and it's important to me that we have a guy that has previously shown we can count on him and Greg.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing is, as far as those investigations go, is this judge in Florida, where she's saying, how come, you know, where she said, you know, how come Biden gets off where he really did take records when he wasn't supposed to and Trump is being prosecuted. I think something's going to come out of that case where they won't have to investigate Biden anymore. It's going to be a slam dunk for the Congress to charge Biden with. Sure, you know, but we'll see.
We'll hope so. Republicans got to stay in control, and the right kind of Republicans, right? No more Ken Buck type. So, yeah, thank you, Jacob. Okay. I know it's a confusing situation, which is what Greg was saying. And so, Charlene, back to your question. That's who had the rules were, which had never been used like since 1992, right? When Jack Swigert, who was a congressperson, died, yeah. Right? And I don't think it was controversial then. But the rules were there in the bylaws. And I think it was confusing. It'll be confusing. But I think, to me, the most confusing thing is, why did Ted Harvey decide to commit political Harry Caray, right? By doing that, he should have just
embarrassing himself.
Well, like Greg said, it didn't go over very well.
Spattering of booze and other things.
Right. So, but anyway, but the good news is, though, is I think the people in election integrity won. Right. The vacancy committee, I think, ended up doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And so now we go back sort of to square one in the other. And so, you know, you've got Boebert, Mike Lynch, Holtorf, Sonnenberg. You got all kinds of people still.
Maybe Florida. Ted Harvey was trying to boost Lauren Boebert because her biggest opponent was Ted Harvey, because he, you know, she appeals to grassroots. He appealed to grassroots until last night. And now there are a lot of.
I think it might help Deborah Flora too.
No, nobody wants Deborah Flora.
Well, you know, she starts. I mean, she.
I know you like her.
Well, no, and she wins. I mean, I would personally, if I were there, I would vote for Lauren Boebert. I know she's got her Lauren Boebert issues, but she's proven.
No, Lauren Boebert's a selfish a-hole, but she votes the right way. She'll support President Trump. And you won't have to worry about her giving you these weird Ken Buck things.
Yeah, she won't be turning Ken Buck. So anyway, so that's settled for now. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
We'll keep you posted on that. Wanted to talk about, there's a bunch of other stuff going on this Friday. I don't know if you saw, because I have a couple thoughts on this, the stuff on social media about a woman in Oklahoma who had apparently posted some anti-Biden stuff on Facebook, and three people who said they were FBI agents showed up at her door about it, right? And so I want to play you the soundbite, and then there are a few observations and want to see what everybody else thinks about this too. But Thomas, if we could please play the FBI soundbite.
So you said you were with the FBI? And why won't you show me your credentials?
We did.
I didn't really take a look at them. I said, 1 second, I'll be right back. Are you going to show me your credentials or no?
Yeah, we did already. So, and we identified ourselves. So what we'd like to do.
I didn't look at your credentials again. Well, I didn't verify them. I told you to wait, and I went inside.
Okay, that's correct. What we'd like to do is just have a conversation with you about some social media posts that you've made. Would you be willing to talk to us today about that?
No, I would not. I would like you to later talk on with my lawyer.
Okay.
Do you have identification?
Do you have a card or something?
Cards?
For an attorney that we can reach out
no.
To?
No. I'll get back to you.
Okay. All right.
You'd like to have your attorney contact the FBI office in Oklahoma City.
What's the number? What are the names of the agents?
I'll Google it for you.
So you're refusing to identify yourselves?
No, we've already identified ourselves.
Again, I did not take a look.
So the phone number for the FBI in Oklahoma City is 405-290-7770.
Okay.
If you just call him, he'll be able to get you in contact with us.
And tell him that Facebook flagged me for posts.
Facebook gave us a couple of screenshots of your account.
Dallas.
Okay. So we no longer live in a free country and we can't say what we want?
No, we totally do. That's why we're not here to arrest you or anything like that.
Well, you can't arrest me for freedom of speech. We live in America.
Correct.
Exactly. So it's kind of weird that you want to come talk to me about me exercising my freedom of speech.
We do this every day, all day long, and talk to people.
Okay.
It's just an effort to keep everybody safe, make sure that nobody has any ill will or bad intent or anything like that. And we've got no reason to believe necessarily that that's you, and that's why we just wanted to have a conversation.
So do you have a conversation with everybody on the neighborhood?
I mean, okay, so many alarming things about that. Number one, let me address just the overall thing. I mean, if this is, if they really are, somehow or another, somebody at Facebook is flagging people's accounts and sending, or, you know, and somebody, maybe it's not Facebook, maybe there's some AI thing that's doing it, but somebody is monitoring Facebook and then sending people pretending or real FBI agents, I'm not sure which is worse, to talk to people in their homes. She handled herself really well.
Oh, didn't she ever?
I'm not convinced those are FBI agents. What's a guy say? I'll Google it for you. I'm like, I'm sorry. You gotta. I mean, well, normally though, agents would show you their identification.
Yeah, but they show you once and go, here you go, thanks. And there's another one if you go on that same thing on Town Hall or whatever it is of people who are clearly FBI agents. And they, you know, go boom, and they go, kind of look at it. No, no, we can't. You know, you can't take a picture. You can't do anything else. That's against our rules. And they clearly were FBI agents. So FBI agents are man, it's got to be a tough world these days.
Well, and I thought after all of the hearings and stuff, right, that Facebook was supposed to quit doing that, right? That Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg's like, well, no, I mean, we were forced to cooperate with them. And they're like, oh, well, stop. So Facebook is flagging. So I'm sorry, I hate Facebook. Facebook is flagging people's accounts and then sending information to FBI agents. And what did he say? We do this every day, all day.
Hey, this is all we do is harass citizens.
And the thing is, it's a psyop, right? They're showing up, I think, and they're hoping that she posted on social media. So anyone else who's posting something would say, well, I better not post it because I might have FBI agents showing up at my door. They can't arrest her.
Of course they can't.
It's simple. It's a scare tactic. It's threatening. I mean, and I think it's just only going to get worse between now and the election, don't you think? I thought she handled herself really well. Yeah, this is, you know, from Sandra. Wow, they do this every day. Holy cow, I agree with you. Let's see. Yeah, from Leo, get off my lawn. It's astonishing to me that that's still going on. And we saw through the Twitter files, and I'm sure in part it's still going on, how, you know, there are a million former FBI agents and CIA agents, you know, and now we're seeing with Google and Amazon, all of the stuff. Yeah. Mike Benz was explaining how, and he goes back to the beginnings, that Google originated essentially as sort of working in cooperation with the CIA.
Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they, one of the things.
Well, the internet was invented, by the Defense Department.
Well, yeah. And that Google initially was being used by the CIA to help, quote, get, you know, birds of a feather who flock together with search engines, right? They were trying to figure out what kind of people were searching. So, and I think AI is only going to make it worse, because they can do it so much faster. Well, and I know the Conservative Treehouse has talked about with AI that it has now the ability to not only look for keywords, because you know how sometimes if you want to, you can like type like a little bit of gibberish, right? But AI has learned apparently how to look for context of things. It can tell, you know, when you say patriot, well, that's not even right. But the way you word it, right? If you say, I won't say this, and they're like, okay, flag that account. So that's just, I mean, it's alarming. And I think, so if the FBI shows up everywhere, just have your cell phone handy and tape it.
Yeah.
From the
beginning. Absolutely. Wow.
You want to talk about John Eastman a little bit?
Sadly, sure.
Okay. Why don't you explain?
Well, John Eastman was brought before the California bar, claiming that he engaged in unethical conduct. And the unethical conduct was usually statements he'd given at speeches.
And advising Trump.
And advising Trump. But the more, because they didn't necessarily have the advising Trump. They just said, you know, anyone. So he had, I don't know, 4 or 5 day trial.
No, it was a 10-week trial.
Oh, I'm sorry, 10 weeks.
10 trial, weeks.
Before this absolute looney tune of a ethics judge who just excoriated him in 23 pages saying, not only did you do this, but you didn't apologize. Yeah, you get to put a defense up, but you were not sorry.
Well, it was 128 pages.
Oh, okay.
The bulk of it was in 23, but it was 128 pages long. And I know I followed Rachel Alexander. If you followed her on Twitter, she covered the trial. And she said it was just a joke, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you know, John Eastman is one of the leading constitutional lawyers in the country,
yes.
right? And he's like, no, the Constitution, we can do this. I'm a lawyer. I can advise my client, right? And instead this is just an ethics bar judge, right? She like totally said, nope, we're going to disbar you. And Eastman, we love Eastman because he's the one who has fought hard and continues to fight in Colorado for the opt-out,
right?
And now if he's disbarred in California, he can still practice law in Colorado?
No. He's also member of the bar of DC circuit. But you know, they'll throw him out as soon as he can. I think what he'll try to do is go to Alabama and get a license there.
Well, and he says he's going to appeal. So if we could please play, here's his reaction to the whole thing. He was on Charlie Kirk's show. If we could please play John Eastman, number one.
You know, almost every page of the opinion is citing government officials making claims that were false. But because the government said the election was the most secure in history or there was no evidence of fraud, anybody that said otherwise was, in this judge's view, making false statements. And so she has upheld 10 of the 11 counts that were brought against me for making false statements in two court actions, even though the courts that were involved not only did not sanction me, but didn't even issue an order to show cause on why any statements were false. This is the California Bar Court kind of taking over a sanctions process from the federal courts itself, including the U.S. Supreme Court. But most of the counts dealt with things I said in public, a speech I gave on the Mall on January 6th, an appearance I did on Steve Bannon, or an article I published. These are about as core protected First Amendment speech as one can imagine. And she just dispensed with the First Amendment, you know, with the back of her hand.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary, right? That the judge, and we've seen them do that. It's right. I mean, the Colorado judge said it was an insurrection, therefore Trump can't be on the ballot. And I mean, the one Supreme Court judge in Colorado, some more, said, oh, normally, like, we have like evidence presented on stuff like that. True. Yeah. Well, though, he was saying, this is why I don't agree with it. But he's like, you can't just as a judge say, but that's what they're doing. But the more scary thing, I'm going to play the second soundbite. John Eastman notes, as we saw with that woman with the FBI, right? They're not just going after the lawyers and the lawyers' lawyers. They're starting to spread it out to affect all of us. If we could please play John Eastman, number two.
So we will fight this with everything we've got, and because it's important. What's going on here is what we call lawfare. It's an attempt by left of activists who initiated the complaint against me to, and one of the leaders of one of these groups, the 65 Project, has made very clear what their goal is. Not only to disbar all the attorneys who were involved, but to make them so toxic in their communities and their firms that right-wing legal talent will never take on these kind of election challenges again. And it's already metastasized beyond election challenges. It's gone to representing parents who are complaining about what schools are doing with their kids. It's craziness that we're dealing with. This is going to destroy the rule of law and our adversarial system of justice.
And I think first of all, who trusts the adversarial system of justice anymore, right? It's alarming because, I mean, look what they did to Sidney Powell, right? They got Jenna Ellis to quit after she, that's probably good. But I think they're trying to make it very difficult for Trump to get representation. They made it difficult for him to post bond, all kinds of things, right? And so that's the kind of stuff that we're up against. Another good thing, though, I'm kind of jumping all over here, but was there anything else you wanted to say on that? Another good thing. So while President Clinton, Obama, and Biden,
Stephen Colbert,
along with Stephen, we're in New York for a giant fundraiser filled with celebrities. Donald Trump was at the funeral of that New York police officer who was killed by an illegal immigrant,
right?
Who had been deported and was back, right? Didn't absolutely have to happen. He was at that funeral. And the Biden administration has been taking all kinds of flack today, people noticing the difference, right? Yeah. So apparently the funeral service, the wake for the officer was held today, and the liberal governor of New York, who has been allowing all of these illegal immigrants in the first place,
right,
showed up, and they kicked her out.
Yeah, that's great.
They made her leave. They made her leave. So there is hope for all of that, too.
Well, you know, and the attorney general went in front of the firefighters, and they all booed. And she said, I'm going to get all of you.
Oh, that's
all
right.
All of you.
They're going to investigate who was booing for her. Well, you know, we've covered this for years, the way that the government hamstrings. I think Fox is doing an investigative report where they went in with some ICE agents who all they did was rearrest aliens, criminal, illegal aliens that they have committed. This was four people had committed rape, sexual assault on a child, that kind of thing, right? All been arrested before, all were arrested for this. And what happens is that the cities like Denver make it illegal, actually illegal for the officers to go ahead and call ICE and say, hey, we've got an illegal immigrant right here and we could put an ICE detainer on him. They can't do that anymore. So
we're not a sanctuary city.
Oh, no. So just because they don't have, you know, they let them out on a person, no matter how heinous the crime, they let them out on a person over cognizant bond. And then they commit another crime, right? Go figure. And ICE is like, then we arrest them and then we try to deport them and then they come back in. I mean, or the Biden administration doesn't do anything. And it is these liberal city policies. You know, you look at what that kind of a hellhole Denver's turning into. Mm-hmm. You know, what did they had yet another death at one of, what do they call them? Mayor Meth, Mike Johnson, you know, at one of his homeless migrant hotel, illegal immigrant hotels. And, you know, I mean, elections have consequences. So I'm glad to see at least some of these people standing up and saying, no, you can't even come here because you have blood on your hands for right. In this case.
Right. That is good. That is good.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Sandra says, let's start calling them what they really are, illegal invaders, using this term from a Tennessee woman who's definitely a conservative. No, Sandra, they are newcomers.
Newcomers.
These are newcomers to our community.
Welcome our newcomers.
Welcome our newcomers. Yeah.
Newcomers.
Charlene says, that was awesome. Politicians in it for the adoration now have to go to Hollywood. Right. And no one watches Hollywood anymore. So it doesn't matter.
Well, the other thing that happened this week was the firing of Romney.
Ronald McDaniel.
God, they hired her. 3 days later, they fired her. And too bad we don't have some of the speeches by Chuck Todd saying, we can't have that kind of person on with us, the anointed, and they would taint. They would taint our program. They'd be sitting in chairs that we sit in. They would stand next to it. We'd give them a platform. They would talk. Can you believe that?
They would tell that they would have no credibility. Yeah, like,
and I don't know whether, you know, if she's saying what she really believes or it's just to keep him the job. And because we know that the press spokesman for Biden are always telling exactly what they think. I mean, it was so pathetic.
So not only is Ronald McDaniel, I think, threatening to sue them and probably will sue them, it's kind of funny. So now the RNC is saying, well, maybe we won't allow NBC access to the Republican, to the presidential convention.
No, I shouldn't.
Well, and I think they're probably torn because I think the RNC doesn't like Ronald McDaniel either. So they're kind of probably happy that this happened to her, right? Because she went on and she denounced Trump, you know, and everything. So they're like, but so maybe it's good that they did this to her. But I hope they do. Just like, you know, I hope that red states take a look at what's going on to John Eastman. It'll never happen in Colorado. And find
a
DNC lawyer or two, right? A Democrat lawyer or two, and disbar that person. Because it's not going to stop until Republicans push back like that.
Well,
right?
A Department of Justice lawyer.
Right.
Take that, you know, if they have their license out of some places, a conservative state. Revoke their license.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, it's time to start playing that kind of hardball. So I kind of hope, actually, that the RNC won't give them access, right?
Yeah, what's
because we know what it's going to look like, right? We know what it's going to look like. And the ratings are dropping, so it's not even like anyone would care that much. So, you look like you're antsy. Chuck is...
I'm ready to get rid of his new clubs.
Oh, okay. We have a very important day today. Our son's new golf clubs come in just in time for the golf season.
And these are great golf courses. You know, there's club champions fit them. They charge you an arm and a leg, but it's the kind of fitting the pros get. You know, every head is tested with your swing and every shaft, and it's just incredibly It's hours of things.
And I raised the point that maybe if I got new golf clubs, that maybe my golf would improve. And Chuck and Rev laughed. They were like,
"Well, because she got
so thrown, I thought maybe a new
she
outfit.
Got thrown out." This is literally true. This is literally true.
You don't have to tell
she
the story.
Got thrown out of the PGA Superstore.
I wasn't thrown out. They just refused to sell. I'm blushing. They refused to sell me a club.
They would not even sell her a driver. They said that just be malpractice for us to let you have a driver.
I can't believe it.
Well, you should blush. You're the only human being, and you kind of go, "I mean, you won't take my money." And so we in good conscience
cannot take your money and sell you a driver. I'm like, geez.
I mean, that's the ultimate insult.
It was the ultimate insult. So I don't buy my driver there.
I bring that story up.
Periodically, they do just to embarrass me, and it works, as you can see. Hey. So anyway, that's why Chuck is antsy. On Monday, we're going to have Robert Spencer on. Like I said,
we love him.
He's got a great column up talking about all of the illegal immigrants coming into this country. That's right, Charlie, now you have other talents, not golf. But he's going to talk about that and the danger that poses to all of us. In the meantime, I want to say happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to everybody, too. So we will be cutting it a little short for golf, as always. But we will see everybody on Monday.
Take care. Have a great weekend.